Now it's time to take a look at the week in Washington, including the resignation of Democratic Representative John Conyers amid sexual harassment allegations, calls for Senator Al Franken to resign, and President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it was right for John Conyers to retire from his seat in the House? Should Al Franken step aside? President Trump has endorsed Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore, also accused of sexual misconduct. Should he step aside in this race? Should the Senate refuse to seat him, have ethics investigations? Call 800-642-1234. Ginger Gibson is a correspondent for Reuters. She joins us now from the U.S. Capitol. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, a lot of news related to sexual misconduct in Congress. First, Democratic Representative John Conyers from Michigan, long-serving member of Congress, says he's retiring yesterday. There have been lots of allegations. What did Conyers say when he announced this?
Conyers tried to position this as a retirement, but it's really a resignation pushed out under a lot of pressure from his fellow members of Congress after multiple accusations that he had sexually harassed women. This is an example of Democrats wanting to clean house. They want to get folks like Conyers out. We suspect that we could see Al Franken leaving the Senate tomorrow. We don't know that for sure, but he's expected to give a statement after another accusation arose. And when we saw Conyers trying to set up a bit of an inheritance and endorsing his son to take the seat, there will be a special election to replace him. But this is really going to be a difficult climb for him. There's going to be a lot of competition and a really sort of a marred departure for him out of the House as he's been under this cloud. You know, we saw folks like Kirsten Gillibrand yesterday speaking at a women's rule event where she said there's just no way he can't have his legacy or his time in Congress tarred by these revelations.
And you mentioned Al Franken. Now, first it was one accusation, then another, and now I think we're over 20 Democratic senators, starting with a group of women, Wisconsin's Tammy Baldwin, calling for Franken to resign. And as you mentioned, an announcement coming up tomorrow. Democratic National Committee Chair Tom Perez is saying Franken should step aside. What led Democrats to go from let's see what happens in the ethics investigation to nope, he's got to go?
Accusations have snowballed. I suspect that Democrats decided it was just too much to be continuing to appear to defend these men. They want to be able to say, look, we had problems in our House, and we cleaned them out, and we got rid of those who were doing things they shouldn't be doing. And they look at folks like Roy Moore in Alabama, where Republicans are now going back to spending money to try to get him elected. And Democrats want to make a clear distinction that they're kicking the folks out, they're pressuring them to leave, that have been accused of even less egregious transgressions, maybe in the case of, one could argue, in the case of Al Franken, and that they're not going to tolerate it. And I think they're really going to make sure that there's a contrast between how their party handles this in their own shop compared to Republicans.
And let's look at Alabama now. This is would have been a big deal anyway, a special Senate election in Alabama, kind of at an unusual time, December of an off year. Then the stories came out about Roy Moore pursuing teens, including minors, in some cases, allegations of sexual assault and harassment. Republicans, a lot of them stepped away. But now President Trump has endorsed him. The Republican National Committee has resumed funding in support of his campaign. Senator Mitch McConnell has gone from opposing him to saying it's up to the voters of Alabama. What led to this turnaround from Republicans?
I suspect that we'll all find out later that his poll numbers started to rebound, and it starts to look like it was inevitable that he was going to be elected. We won't know that for sure, obviously, until next week. But we've seen this routine, this sort of cycle with Republicans before. When the Access Hollywood video about Donald Trump came out, lots of Republicans were saying, oh, no, I can't vote for him, I can't get behind him, I can't support him. When it looked like it was turning around and going back, or eventually when he got elected, we saw them go back to supporting Donald Trump. So we're seeing a bit of that again. I think that the signs would point that to evidence that he may be winning this race, that Doug Jones is unable to sort of build a deeper amount of support, and that when Republicans saw it as inevitable, they decided to put their tail between their legs and go back, knowing that in short order he would be the senator from Alabama.
Want to hear from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, now White House press secretary, talking yesterday about Moore and the president's support.
The president's position hasn't changed, still finds those concerning. But as we've also said, the president feels that he would rather have a person that supports his agenda versus somebody who opposes his agenda every step of the way. And until the rest of that process plays out, you have a choice between two individuals, and the president's chosen to support Moore.
There's been angry response from some Republicans. Former RNC chair Michael Steele tweeted an angry post there. Republican Senator Jeff Flake tweeted a picture of a $100 check he wrote to the Democrat in the race, Doug Jones. Mitt Romney on record in a bit of a dispute with Steve Bannon over this. Not all Republicans are on board here.
You're correct. They're not all on board, and we're seeing a real sort of growing fight between the factions of the Republican Party, the Jeff Flake, Mitt Romney faction, and the Steve Bannon faction. I don't suspect it's going to end with the Alabama special election. I think it's going to keep going. Bannon attacking Mitt Romney last night for doing a Mormon mission instead of serving in Vietnam when he was younger. This is getting ugly. It's been ugly. I think it's going to keep being ugly, these attacks between both sides. It is a difficult place. It is difficult in politics to litigate any of the things that have to do with sexual harassment or sexual abuse. The politics at play makes it a different arena than even talking about it in the workplace. But an election makes it even more difficult. And I think that's what we're seeing here, people picking sides because they want a party to control the seat, and people on the other side saying that they just can't back a candidate for that reason.
We're talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top national political news of the week. Coming up, a possible government shutdown on the way and a big announcement about Jerusalem from the president. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're continuing our weekly look at national politics with Ginger Gibson. She's a correspondent for Reuters, joining us from the Capitol. Ginger, big news today, though it's been kind of telegraphed. President Trump announced that he wants to move, or recognize, I should say, Jerusalem now as the capital of Israel. Now, this information has been coming up for a while. This wasn't a complete and utter shock.
Not a shock. This is something that President Trump talked about on the campaign trail and said he wanted to do. And because it was such a controversial decision, particularly among some of our allies in the Arab world and in Europe, it was clearly telegraphed ahead of time. We know that President Trump spoke with a number of our allies to inform them that this decision was coming. And it's not quite the full move that he had promised early on. He is not yet moving the U.S. Embassy into Jerusalem. It will currently remain in Tel Aviv. But he did sign an order today that officially recognizes it as the capital. And that's a bit of a controversial move. It is seen by some as intervening on behalf of the Israelis in peace talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians about how they can find a two-state solution to peace there.
Let's give a listen to President Trump talking earlier this afternoon.
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering.
This had been a campaign promise from President Trump, and Congress many years ago had directed the United States to recognize it, but given each president an out where twice a year they could formally postpone that decision, right? So, in effect, President Trump is not postponing this decision anymore.
Correct. There's a very delicate balance that we have seen on this issue from both Congress and previous presidents. Congress voted. It was something that Republicans wanted to do. It was something more so that we saw among the evangelical community as a request to see happen, making for sort of an interesting alignment of political interests, a domestic but the foreign policy issue, and they did give presidents that out. They could delay the decision, which basically allowed Congress to pass legislation that didn't actually have to be implemented, and presidents have taken that option thus far. President Trump, the first to not do that, but still not going so far as to move the nation's embassy to Jerusalem.
We're going to take another look at this, a deeper look at this decision tomorrow on Central Time at 4:30. Want to move on, Ginger, before we run out of time? Government shutdown maybe in, what, 2 days?
Correct. We are right at the edge of another government shutdown. We are days away, and I'm talking to you from the United States Capitol, where they are not yet passing a spending bill. We've seen this before, sort of waiting until the very last minute to act, and we could see that again, Congress moving swiftly at the deadline to get it done. But there's a possibility that they won't be able to. The Republican Party has a lot of fractures within itself. They can't agree on funding, on policy priorities, on trying to force Democrats to support some of the things that they want to see get done. And for that reason, it might be possible that they can't come to an agreement and that they shut the government down. President Trump has said that he thinks a shutdown would be good for him. He's trying to blame Democrats for it, although it is to be noted that Republicans control both chambers of Congress and the White House. So that may be a difficult sale to make to the American people. They do shut the government down.
And briefly, Ginger, you just wrote kind of a first year of the Trump presidency piece, looking back at a busy year. You know, once upon a time, government shutdown in 2 days would have been the top story all week. Things are different now, aren't they?
It's true. I was here in covering Congress when they shut the government down in 2013. It's all we talked about for the weeks leading up and the weeks afterwards. It has not been the case this time. It's very different tone in Washington. We get a lot less sleep here these days. It's a lot busier. The news cycle is a lot more demanding and quick. And for that reason, it's not the headline. But I can assure you, if the government shuts down on Friday, I think everyone will be hearing about it on Saturday morning.
We'll leave it there for now. Ginger, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's Ginger Gibson. She's a correspondent for Reuters, and she joined us for a weekly look at the biggest political stories from Washington. Again, we'll follow up on one of those stories, the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. We'll talk about that tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll get some winter getaway recommendations around the state of Wisconsin. You can share some of your favorites right now. Just head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. You get some recommendations from our guest's article there and share some of your favorites. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, the weather is colder, the days are shorter, and you might be tempted to just hunker down at home and wait for spring. But a lot of people know this. Wisconsin has a lot of great places to explore and get away from it all in the winter. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Where's your favorite place to go to enjoy Wisconsin outdoors in the winter? What are some of your favorite winter getaways? Do you have a favorite place for a wintertime vacation in the state? What do you recommend? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Chelsea Lewis has some recommendations. She's a multimedia journalist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She wrote a piece called Four Fall and Winter Getaways in Wisconsin. You can find the link to that piece at WPR.org. Chelsea, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, are you tempted ever, Chelsea, to say, winter, it's not my time to be outside? Or are you really gung-ho? You get out there and enjoy the winter.
I mean, I think we all hit that point maybe like mid-February when we're just done. But I think if you are willing to endure the cold a little bit and, you know, you wear the right clothing and get out there, you can really enjoy some of Wisconsin's beautiful landscapes.
Well, your piece takes us to all corners of the state, really, and you start off in the Driftless region. What does the Driftless region have to offer us, especially in the winter?
Yes, I love the Driftless region. It's such a beautiful part of the state. It's, of course, the part of the state the glaciers didn't touch, so there's these beautiful rolling hills, really a different landscape than a lot of the rest of the state. And part of that is the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, which is kind of this big protected area that protects part of the Kickapoo River. In the summer, it's really popular for canoeing and fishing and stuff, but in the winter, it's gorgeous to visit as well. There's great snowshoeing and cross-country skiing on a lot of the trails in the reserve there. There's also a really great little ranch called the Kickapoo Valley Ranch just outside of the reserve that I loved. These cozy little cabins that have wood-burning fireplaces and big porches, which of course you might not want to partake in the winter, but still really gorgeous views of the reserve and the surrounding hills.
I think you hit a key word there for planning a vacation around the state. Yes, we get out there and get the outside stuff, but then we want someplace cozy to end up. Is that an important theme for you?
Absolutely, yeah. I like to be outside during the day, but then you want to warm up maybe around a nice fire at night.
Yeah, and a fireplace, is that a key for a nice winter, especially nature or rural getaway?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up with a wood-burning fireplace in our home.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it has to be. But, you know, I'll take a gas one if that's all I've got.
I want to hear from listeners at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite outdoor getaway destination in Wisconsin, your favorite outdoor activity during the winter here in the state, favorite place or thing to do? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And Chelsea, another area, another region on your list, of course, the Northwoods. A lot of people head up there for the summer, maybe hunting season in the fall. What's it got for us in the winter?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, like you said, go up in the summer to their summer cabins or cottages and then kind of shut them down for the winter. But the winter is one of my favorite times to be up there because it's so much quieter. And there's great cross-country skiing. I love Minocqua Winter Park just outside of Minocqua, just miles and miles of trails there. You can rent gear if you don't have your own. You can even take lessons. And then actually a lot of the rates at some of the resorts are lower in the winter, so you can probably get a good deal on a nice little cozy cabin with one of those fireplaces. I like Black's Cliff, which is just outside of Minocqua in Hazelhurst. It's on a nice frozen lake, and they actually like shovel out a nice ice rink in front of the resort, so you can kind of go out there and play pond hockey like the good old days. So that's one of my favorite spots in the Northwoods.
And that's a good thought. Maybe there aren't a lot of people there. Maybe there are better deals, and you're not dealing with the height of the crowded tourist season in what might otherwise be tourist areas.
Exactly, yeah. And, of course, you've got all the great supper clubs and stuff up there, too. Norwood Pines is a good one. But, yeah, you still get most of the good stuff you get in the summer, but less crowds and usually cheaper rates.
Let's ring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Becca on the line in Elk Mound. Becca, hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. It's not really a far drive for us. We actually are able to be home and there in only about 15 minutes. But my husband and I love to snowshoe at the Hoffman Hills Recreational Area right by us in Elk Mound. It's in between Elk Mound and Menominee, Wisconsin.
Becca, thank you so much. You're waiting for some snow, I imagine, to be able to go out and do that this year?
Yeah, I'm a person who loves snow. I'm a school teacher, so I keep telling the kids, "Oh, just keep wishing," and we've just got it dusting now. So.
And do you have a snow day? Is that how you make use of it as a teacher? You get out and snowshoe?
Oh, very much so. I love to do that.
Becca, thank you so much. And in addition to the snowshoeing, Chelsea, that's a good idea. I mean, yes, a weekend getaway or a week getaway is great, but there's probably some cool stuff to do not far from our own backyards.
Absolutely, and I think that's important to remember, especially right now, you know, kind of during the holidays when everything's crazy. It seems like it's hard to get away for a weekend, but even a little day getaway or at night, I like to go out to Lapham Peak. I'm pretty close to that in Waukesha County and get some skiing in at night when there's snow, of course. So hoping for that, praying for snow.
All right, you've got a couple other what we might think of as summertime tourist destinations on your list. Wisconsin Dells, of course, you know, in the summer we can do the duck rides and the outdoor water parks. What have you got going on in the winter in Wisconsin Dells?
Yeah, well, of course, there's the indoor water parks that you can head up in the winter there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there's also some really nice outdoor, beautiful spots. I love Mirror Lake, just a really calm, beautiful spot for snowshoeing in the winter. And also a little known, well, maybe not so little known spot there, the Seth Peterson Cottage, which is a Frank Lloyd Wright designed cottage that's actually in the park. You can rent it out. If you can snag a reservation, those go about 2 years out and they go pretty fast. But even if you can't, you can take a tour of it. I think it's like the one Sunday a month they give tours for a few bucks donation. So that's a really nice little spot in the Dells.
Let's bring on another caller now. Emily is with us in Superior. Emily, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Emily?
Well, I don't really want to tell you because I'd like to share my secret spots, but this one's not too secret. If you're ever in Superior or Duluth or on the North Shore, Ashland, go to the beach in the winter, because a lot of people haven't seen the way the beach, the way Lake Superior freezes. And it's amazing. I mean, you get 8 to 10 foot frozen waves because the ice just keeps building up on the shoreline. And then you can actually walk out. I've walked out carefully, obviously, quite a ways onto the lake. And it's the way it freezes is magnificent and magical.
I love that. Thank you so much for that, Emily. And I love seeing that even on smaller lakes, Chelsea, but on Lake Superior, that's got to be the ultimate ice wave place to go.
Yeah, definitely. I know Lake Winnebago has some really nice ice shoves in the winter, too, kind of on the eastern shore there. But that's such a great suggestion, going to the beach, too, in the winter. Definitely less crowds then, and its own kind of beauty.
Emily, thanks for sharing that. I'm going to guess it's not going to get too crowded for you up there still in the middle of winter. Luke is with us next on the line in Eau Claire. Luke, hi.
Hi there. I'm up in Eau Claire here, and biking has become a four-season sport these days. And I happen to be the race director of a fat bike and snowshoe race here in Eau Claire at January 27th. So if you want to try fat biking or like fat biking or snowshoeing, we have a 5K and a 10K snowshoe race and a 12K and a 24K mountain bike race, or a combined event if you want to try both of them at the same time.
So wait, it's like a biathlon with snowshoeing and then biking, or vice versa? Or are you wearing the snowshoes on the bike?
No, you don't wear snowshoes on the bike. That'd be a little hard. But yeah, it's like a biathlon. So you can either do the long and the short and the short.
Cool.
Your choice. So biking, I guarantee you will not be cold biking after biking as fast as you can for 12 to 24 miles.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that, Luke. Chelsea, I don't know, I think of cross-country skiing events and skiing events, but there's other sports we can get out in the winter, too.
Yeah, totally. Fat tire biking is becoming so huge the past few years. I've not done fat tire biking, but I've seen people out in the Kettle Moraine on the John Muir and Emma Carlin trails in the winter, and it seems like it's a fun way to get outside.
Luke, thanks a lot for that. Good luck with this year's events. And Susan is with us next in Park Falls. Susan, hi.
Hi.
What would you want to tell us about, Susan?
Well, I live in Park Falls. I work in Ashland, so I drive Route 13 north several times a week. And Copper Falls is one of my favorite places any season. You can walk along this beautiful trail, see waterfalls, and you can cross-country ski other trails, and you can snowshoe. And once you get up to Ashland, you can do the book across the bay and from Ashland to Washburn in February.
I want to hear about Copper Falls in the winter, Susan. Do you get, like, along the streams, do you get the water freezing over, kind of ice covering
it?
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, you get this just beautiful brown, you know, how it makes, it's coppery color, and then it's just ices over. It still flows, though, but it's, there are a lot of places to see the falls. It's a pretty easy hike around, I mean, not easy, but it's about a mile and a half, and you can go either direction, and it's built by those people that were working. It's a lot of wooden trails.
The Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, there are big signs that say that. But yeah, you can. It's built by those people, and it's nicely designed.
I want to do that, Susan. Thanks so much for that suggestion. And Chelsea, I don't want to forget, you also talk about Door County as a great place to go in the winter.
Yeah, I think that's another one of those destinations that obviously is really popular in the summer and kind of slows down in the winter, although it's getting even more popular in the winter now. But some really great spots to cross-country ski and snowshoe. You know, there are 5 state parks there and over a dozen other county and local parks. And, again, good rates on a lot of the B&Bs. The Eagle Harbor Inn in Ephraim is one of my favorites. It's a really nice little elegant bed and breakfast there. So, yeah, lots to do in Door County in the winter, too.
And, Chelsea, as we wrap up, are you crossing your fingers for some snow soon to enjoy some of these places?
Yeah, absolutely. I really want to get my snowshoes out and get some skiing in, so, and hopefully have a white Christmas. So we'll see.
Chelsea, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Chelsea Lewis, multimedia journalist from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel. She joined us to share some of her top winter getaways around Wisconsin. Thank you, by the way, for sharing some of yours, too.